It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard round the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host, Mark Young, and we're here to tell the truth. You know, I want to start off by reading something that happened on July 7th, 1776.
So this is current news.
Current news. George Washington delivered this bold challenge to his fellow countrymen. The fate of the unborn millions will now depend on, under God, on the courage and conduct of this army. Let us therefore rely upon the goodness of the cause and the aid of the supreme being in whose hands victory is to animate and encourage us to great and noble actions. Whatever happened to that?
Well, the first thing I would say is the men of those that era, the people of that era, spoke far more eloquently than people do today.
Yeah.
But the second thing is, you were listening to the writings of a man who was putting his country ahead of his of himself.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians don't do that today.
Much like Donald Trump does today. And I have to admit, Donald Trump has put his country ahead of his own. I don't care what the left says or what the media says. He has certainly put his country out front of himself.
Well, there's that, you know, $40, $50 in profit he makes when somebody stays at a hotel.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's using his authority, you know, to influence world leaders to stay with him.
So let me ask you a question. In today's politics, and probably over the last maybe 15, 20 years, who is the most dangerous man in the world?
George Soros.
George Soros is truly the most dangerous man in the world.
Yes, he's even banned from some countries now.
Why can't they ban him from this country?
Because the left loves George Soros. They banned George Soros, half of their Democratic campaign funds would dry up.
You know what I think? I think George Soros is probably buying land along the border so that the wall can't be built.
I wouldn't be surprised by that.
I'm serious.
And speaking of Soros, Chuck, nobody wants to touch this subject of Greta Thunberg.
Well, it's because she's a little girl. She's 16 years old. She is a shield to the left. They always use children as a shield because they're not man enough to man up.
This girl is autistic, has obsessive compulsive disorder, suffers with Asperger's syndrome. Mm-hmm. Her parents are a couple of climate
communist,
climate lunatics. Mm-hmm. She has photographs of herself standing with the most evil man in the world, George Soros.
Well, of course.
And she's actually a professional actor.
Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, does she belong to some kind of union or something? Like AFTRA or SAG?
She's in INBD as an actress for hire. She has an agent. And she's appeared in films.
Oh. Well,
she's an actress.
Go. So Hollywood and Soros and Sweden or Switzerland. Where is she from? Sweden?
Yes, Sweden. And people are treating this girl like she's a climate expert.
You know, there will never, ever in the mainstream media be a debate on climate change, ever. Because they would be, talk about Joe Biden saying beaten like a drum. They will be beaten by a drum by anyone who knows anything in climate science. And they know it, which is why they've shut down the debate.
You have stolen my dreams.
I think her parents and the left has stolen her dream, bless her heart. I mean, I feel, you know what? I tweeted out something this morning. I said, good morning, America. If you're Democrats, you're miserable and angry. The rest of us, have a nice day.
Now, by the way, her agent is a person by the name of Louisa Neubauer.
By the way, when I say Democrats, I don't mean the rank and file Democrats. I don't think they really, a lot of those go along with all this junk that the leadership is going along with. Now, say that again.
So her manager, the woman who's managing this young girl, is Louisa Neubauer.
Oh, she has a manager.
Yes, and Louisa works for One.org. One.org is funded by Bill and Melissa Gates, mm-hmm. Bono, and guess who else? Take a guess.
George Soros, I'm
George
guessing.
George Soros. Good choice.
What in
you
the
won.
World is Bill Gates and Bono doing in bed with George Soros? I mean, good night.
Because they are subscribers to the open society concept that individuals are not smart enough to make decisions in their own best
interest. Well, wait a minute. Open society doesn't necessarily mean that, does it? It's globalism on steroids, isn't it? I mean, it's no borders. It's a centralized government located somewhere in Europe, much like the EU, telling everyone in the world what they can and cannot do.
But there's a philosophy behind
it, though. By the ton.
But there's a philosophy behind George Soros' Open Society.
Okay.
And the philosophy behind Open Society is that there are only a few, there's only a handful of intellectual, enlightened, gifted people.
This is the left all over.
Who are smart enough to make good decisions. And the rest of us, the unwashed masses.
Don't really surely deserve that freedom.
We're not capable of managing freedom, Chuck. We can't be trusted with it. Because we'll just hurt ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we need the George Soros and the Bill Gates and these people to guide us.
Well, we've certainly been doing pretty well for, you know, a few hundred years.
And this is what the founding fathers knew, as you were just quoting from President Washington. Mm-hmm. The founding fathers knew that the best model to run a country was to let people be as free as possible. And that's why the founding fathers trusted. They didn't have a problem with everyone in the country being armed.
Right.
Because they trusted their citizens. Mm-hmm. Under the open society model, which is what is the Democratic Party is becoming, which is basically the socialist party.
It's what they are.
They are. And socialism, and the goal of socialism is to become communism. They don't trust us to make our own decisions.
You know, it's amazing to me because you're right. The socialism is really to become communism. And yet we know, as you look around the world, everywhere communism has been tried, has failed miserably, failed the people miserably. It's killed off millions of people under the rule of Stalin, under the rule of Mao. I mean, there's no question about that.
And I want to point something out to people too, Chuck, if I could for a minute before we get to our guest. And that is, you and I with this program, with what we do on Twitter, we pay a price for this.
Oh boy.
It costs us clients, it costs us endorsements, it costs us money. Mm-hmm. And I want what people to understand is when we talk about the open society, and the elite group of people who are the people best to make decisions for the masses. This doesn't have a direct effect on you and I.
No, not on me personally, nor you personally. That's true. We're carrying the banner for many people it does.
Right. Both of us could live our lives and be above the fray.
Right.
And we could easily go and jump into their side.
And by the way, like most people, well, not most people, but people on the left who are, you know, in Hollywood and places like that, it's not going to affect them financially, or it's not going to hurt their lives or stop them or getting on their private jets and doing all that kind of stuff. They'll
exactly.
always have that.
So when we're out here fighting for this stuff, understand we're not angry. We're not mad. We're not feeling that we're being beaten down, that, you know, our lives are being ruined, because quite frankly, Chuck and I have great lives.
I am fearful for the lives of my children and your children.
Exactly. That's what we're out here fighting for. In the lives of your, not, I say yours, our audience, their children and grandchildren.
That's what I mean, yeah.
So it's, we're and fighting
this whole
for
thing,
the future.
This cultural jihad that's going on, and I mean, we used to think about it, it's only in colleges and high schools and things like that. Well, now it's in grade schools. They're talking about anti-Trump, leading all kinds of chants against Trump. And it's really anti-American.
Chuck, and on that note, a San Francisco communist teachers mm-hmm. drug 5-year-old children with hate Trump signs to a rally and then coached them on how to make hateful chants. So it's funny. This is three public schools.
This is exactly
schools.
What I was talking about. But go
it
ahead.
Is. Three public schools in San Francisco took kids as young as five to march in a close the camps leftist protest. The teachers are indoctrinating children that Donald Trump is a racist and that he hates immigrants. He's married to an immigrant.
Doesn't matter.
The children are also being lectured in public school on the goodness of open borders.
What the is children, the goodness of open borders? Tell me what the goodness is. Describe it to me.
Because you are an uncaring, crass, wealthy Republican.
What is the goodness of open borders? What is the goodness of America pouring all of its money into Medicaid for foreigners? What? Tell me.
Because these people are suffering in these other countries, Chuck. Mm-hmm. And
it's up to you're us selfish. To take care of
them. You're selfish. Mm-hmm. The children were prepared for their protest. They were actually encouraged and graded on how well they made their I hate Trump signs. And then the teachers coached them on how to do anti-Trump chants.
Do you believe, as I do, and I think Rush Limbaugh does, that there are millions and millions upon millions more of Americans who are just seething right now?
I believe that there are a lot of decent, everyday people that are sick of this crap, that are sick of their kids being indoctrinated, sick of Beta O'Rourke, who claims he's going to come to your house and take your AR-15, sick of Spartacus, who says, if I'm president, you won't be allowed to own a car. Do you know how many cars there are in America right now? I
mean, it's so ludicrous. It's so insane. You know, it's almost not worth a mention. And yet these people do it like it's normal.
There's 168 million cars and trucks in America.
Well, what about the rest of the world?
Well, but they're only running for dictator of America right now.
Yeah.
Although Joe Biden seems to think he's running for president of the world.
Right. Which Joe Biden will not be, you know, this whole thing between Trump and Biden and Ukraine and everything. I don't think Biden was ever going to be the choice of the Democrat Party anyway. I said this on several other podcasts that I've visited and talked with. And I never thought that Joe Biden was going to be the guy, although he always leads in the polls because I don't believe any of the polls anyway. I wouldn't believe the polls if they said Trump was up 50 points. I don't believe them.
Well, the polls said Hillary had a 97% chance of winning.
That's what I mean. I don't believe these polls anyway. And Joe Biden is not going to be the Democrat choice for president, I don't think.
If you look at the top...
I've never thought that.
If you look at the top three between Biden, Bernie, and Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
Okay, now remember...
Elizabeth Warren, you ever notice when Elizabeth Warren walks out on stage? Now, picture this. If you've seen her walk out on stage, does she not look like someone who is drowning and flailing to get herself to the top of the water and get a breath? I mean, seriously. She looks like trying to tread water. It's just amazing.
Well, you look at Elizabeth Warren, everything about her is fake. Fake Indian, fake beer drinker, and her entire platform she stole from Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. She's literally lifted Bernie's platform.
Right. Well, I don't think you have to walk too far on the left to lift Bernie's platform. Mm-hmm. Most of them just, you know, I believe this, that Bernie's platform is really the left's platform. It has been for years. It's just that no one had the guts to go there. And since he did the last election and he's moving in this election, they all feel empowered to go ahead and adopt everything Bernie stands for, which is communist, basically. And so they feel very empowered right now to just take on Bernie's positions.
So if you look at the
and what has Bernie done? What has Bernie done? And how long has he been a senator?
32 years, and he's renamed two post offices.
He's named two post offices. Honest to God, he's got nothing. He's never done anything.
Well, he does. Man, he has come up with a very unique way of styling his hair with a balloon, though.
Yeah, well.
So I mean, I do like the balloon hairstyle. But if you look at their top three candidates right now, which are all white.
Right.
Which are all privileged, mm-hmm. which are all wealthy, and
it
which are all
in the
over
face of
70.
Everything they say they stand for, isn't it?
And all over 70.
Uh-huh.
So they want ethnic, they want women. Well, I guess she is a woman. And they want youth. And oh my God, I mean, Bernie and Biden are what? 70?
I had somebody on Twitter. Actually, I was in a photo somewhere. I don't know where they got the photo, but anyway, my neck is kind of wrinkled because I'm 78, okay? And this happens to you as you get older. So I got this kind of turkey neck going, and they just showed a picture of my neck and said, this is really Chuck Woolery today.
We're campaigning against Chuck Woolery's neck.
Yeah, right.
So here's what I think is going to happen. Warren seems to still have momentum, which boggles my mind.
It doesn't mind. I'm not surprised at all.
Bernie is stuck in a rut. Bernie has the Bernie bros. He won't lose them, and he can't gain anyone.
Bernie jumped the shark last election.
And the reason I think Elizabeth Warren is going to come out in front is because the Bernie bros and the Warren followers, the Warren tribe, are essentially the same audience, broken half. So that audience is going to migrate to one or the other. Mm-hmm. And my guess is Bernie will lose before Warren will.
I've always said that I thought Warren would be the next candidate for the Democrats. I could be wrong.
How do you think Trump debating her?
Maybe she'll run a 16-year-old out in front of her to shield her. I don't know.
Well, she is big on taking selfies with little girls and telling them they should be the president. Which we might be better off with an 8-year-old as president over having Elizabeth Warren. So before we get to guests, I'm going to tell you something. So Bernie's come out now this weekend. Have you noticed that every weekend Bernie takes up a new crazy cause?
Yes.
He has a cause of the weekend.
Right.
This weekend his cause is rent control.
For all you renters out there having trouble paying your bills.
National rent control, because evil fat cat landlords should not be allowed to just increase the rent on people. Mm-hmm. So we've had rent control in the past.
We have.
New York's had it. LA's had it. Yeah. So if you look up the history of rent control, I just want to share this with you real quick. If you look up the history of rent control, guess what? Who rent control hurts the most? Other than the landlords.
Renters.
The low income. Mm-hmm. It hurts the poor the most. So the very people that he claims he's out to help are always the people that Bernie's plans or Warren's plans hurt the most.
But this is a constant theme on the left. Those they claim to help, they hurt. Those they claim are doing all these bad things are really them. It's just a theme that they run on year after year. And you wonder, does anybody ever catch on to this? I mean, do people realize this? Are they living in a vacuum?
Well, here's the history of rent control. So Bernie says we need national rent control because evil landlords shouldn't be allowed to just raise the rent when they feel like it. Mm-hmm. Because you, Chuck Woolery, if you own an apartment building and you own it and you paid for it with your own money, you should not have the right to do whatever you'd like with it.
Well, it's the same theme in business where they say every worker should make the same amount of money as the CEO.
And own the company now.
And own the company. I mean, you know, it's the same Soviet-style propaganda.
Right. So my old idea is take the janitor and make him president of the company. Let's see how well the company lasts. So here's what rent control really does, Chuck. What happens in rent control is one of two things. Either the landlord converts the building into a condo because I can't charge enough rent to make it worthwhile. So I'll turn it into a condo building and I'll sell the units because rent control doesn't control the sale price. Low-income people can't qualify to buy the units. The second thing that happens under rent control is if I don't take my building and convert it into condos, which, as you know, I own a lot of apartments.
Yes, I do.
So the second step here is what happens is you stop maintaining your apartments because you can't afford to put any money in them. So you just let them become run down. Mm-hmm. And then people end up living in run down, inferior, you know, ghetto apartments because you don't have the money to fix them up.
Right.
So no matter how you look at rent control, rent control punishes the poorest. And now here's the last part of this.
Control punishes the poorest.
That's all it is.
Always.
And here's the bottom line is, nothing nothing can adjust and balance the marketplace better than just free market dynamics. And that is, if you live in an apartment building and the landlord raises the rent, and he raises the rent beyond the market rates, then guess what? Everybody moves out and moves to another building.
Right.
Because another landlord who is at market rates will take the business.
Unless you live in San Francisco, where no one can afford to live. And so they all live on the streets.
And rent control will increase that homelessness in a place like San Francisco.
And LA. And
yes,
and
absolutely. Well, Chuck, we have a guest today. We're going to talk to Lacey Lee Johnson. Now, Lacey Lee Johnson, by the way, folks, Lacey Lee Johnson is a male, not a female, in case you're not familiar with her. And Lacey is running against one of, Chuck, one of your favorite people, Ilhan Omar, because I know you and Ilhan are very close.
Very close.
And
thank you for that.
So, Lacey, welcome to Blunt Force Truth.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad to be here.
It's Chuck. Lacey, how you doing?
Oh, how you doing, Chuck?
I'm good. I'm good. So you're a, are you, would you classify yourself as a technical engineer? Is that what you are?
Yeah, I consider myself, if I had to come up with a term, a computer technologist. I've worked in all phases of computers as far as programming them and being in a subsystem engineer, firmware engineer, hardware engineer, project management, line management. So I consider myself a technologist in computers.
So you understand systems thinking?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
God forbid we get someone in Congress who understands systems thinking.
Yeah. Well, you know, you might have read, I'm not really a politician, and that's the toughest part about politics. Opinions and emotions count more than data, facts, and logic. So, but I'm wading my way through it.
Lacey, remember what Joe Biden said? We are the party of truth, not facts.
That's right.
And I've heard you guys before I came on. I heard you guys talking, and I'm in lockstep with everything you're saying. That's one of the reasons I'm running.
Well,
I'm trying to get a great, a lot of the demographics that supporting the Democrat Party. They don't realize that the party is really harming them more than doing them any good. In fact, I don't see any good the party is doing them. And so I'm trying to spread that message and turn the ship and get people to make a connection between their votes and these ongoing decades-old problem in a lot of these communities.
So, Lacey, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to be very blunt with you.
Yes.
You're running as a Republican. You are a black male. And
yes,
according to people on the left, a black male who thinks as a conservative or a Republican is mentally ill. Because you're not allowed to have diversity of thinking. You are under the Democratic model. Blacks belong to the Democratic Party. They own the African American vote.
What
is up with that? And how much abuse do you take for being a conservative?
Well, I take some abuse, but luckily I live in what they consider the hood in Minneapolis. And I've been out here doing some good work, I think, for decades. And so there are a lot of people who know me personally. They're still not sure about this Republican thing, but they have a lot of personal respect for me and what I've done and my intelligence and knowledge. So I don't get that from too many people. Now, of course, the way politics work, they can always go out and put a black person on payroll to call me names, and I expected that before I got in. But the way I look at it is that as I learned more and thought more for myself and applied data logic and things like that and looked at the principle of the Democratic Party versus the principle of the Republican Party, to me it's a no-brainer. The principle of the Republican Party is what's best for us. And once again, as a technical person, when I look at the data for the past four decades, I think I can make a great case that very few people can argue with from an intellectual or mental standpoint. And what they will go back to is their feelings and emotions. And so I think they realize that they are dealing with feelings and emotions and not logic. And most of them do respect me for my knowledge and my previous work. So, yeah, I get that. I expected it. But believe me, I'm prepared for it and I can deal with it. And I'm pretty comfortable in my own skin.
You represent the Democrat Party's biggest fear. And that is that they will lose the black vote and that people will start thinking for themselves and do what they feel is right for themselves. instead of following in lockstep with the Democrat Party. I mean, it's just, you are enemy number one to them.
And we're seeing so many African-Americans that are jumping over to the Republican Party recently. I mean, so many people like yourself and you know, Candace Owens and the Hodge twins. And, I mean, there's so many, you know, prominent people that are saying, look, you know, Kanye, I want to think for myself. I've had enough of this stuff.
And let's not forget some of the originals, Diamond and Silk.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right. Diamond and Silk remind me of a black church. It's like one big black church. Am I close? Yes, you are.
Yeah. But once again, after a while, if you have a few people thinking for themselves, we start spreading the word. And believe it or not, I've had some great, great conversations back and forth with my lost, I call them gullible African-American friends on my politics. And I think I'm slowly wearing some of them down. I'm even getting a lot of people who say, you know, I've been voting Republican for all my life. And the more I think about it, I can't figure out why.
You mean thing Democrat. Is that, they've been voting Democrat all their life.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I voted Democrat all my life. Right. I'm sorry. And I can't figure out why. And then a lot of them, the first step you do is to get them to look at the issues that's been going on for decades, get them to understand and first accept the fact that party really doesn't matter when you're looking at solutions. So once they do that, then, you know, it's another kind of slow crawl to, okay, we'll vote for a Republican. And the great thing about it is that and I got some wonderful, wonderful contributions and letters from hardcore Democratic friends and family members of mine that say, hey, look, you're the first Republican I ever thought about voting for, I've ever thought about supporting. And so once again, I just have to believe that people know the truth when they hear it, and they are open to data, facts, and things. Now, of course, I always tell them about the parable of the sower, where there are some people out there, I call them, they're just rockheads. No matter what truth you hit them with, they're not going to accept it. So I know that going in too. But I think I have my long-term goal is to turn this ship away from the Democrat Party, because I think they've done us a lot of harm the past four decades, and that they sold us on a bill of goods, and that need to be pointed out to people by the right messenger. And I think with my background, I am a good messenger for it. And we are converting people.
Yeah, you can just talk so long and not deliver, and people eventually have to catch on and go, what am I doing? I think Trump was brilliant when he said, you know, what have you got to lose? Because, I mean, you really don't have anything to lose.
No, you don't. Everything you gain, actually.
Exactly.
Do you consider yourself, are you the front runner on the Republican side, or do you have what you would call a tough primary coming?
I consider myself the front runner. People in the party know me, and I think for the most part, the party think of me as the better candidate. But, you know, you never take anything for granted. I still got to work. I still got to get my delegates to support, and I still have to win the endorsement. But I feel pretty good about my chances. Believe me, I feel fairly, fairly good. I'm comfortable that I should be able to pull this off and then go on with my campaign against Ms. Omar, and hopefully she'll get into a debate, because there's nothing I love more than debating Democrats with their crazy idea, liberal idea. So
she'll never debate you.
Yeah, she probably won't. If I were her, I wouldn't debate me. And there are people in the I ran for a state office last time. I had a debate with my Democratic opponent, and everybody agreed I just sliced and diced him, and I would do the same thing with her. And I think he's probably going to warn off debating me. Because as you guys were pointing out, most of their ideas are basically illogical and nonsensical. And I could easily point that out. So, and keep it in mind, as they say, a leopard don't change its stripes. I know what they're going to come in with. And I know the crazy nonsense idea they're going to come in with. So I hope she debates me and we get a chance to give the voters a clear difference between her philosophy and my philosophy. Why her philosophy and the Democrats' philosophy has not worked for the past few decades, and why mine will. As a matter of fact, my last election, everybody said to me, Lacey, if people hear your message, they're going to support you. And I got standing ovation in the black churches and things like that. Now, there were still those.
I was just going to ask you if you've gone to black churches, because that's where you belong.
Oh, yeah, I've gone there, and I got great support. Some of the ministers, in fact, One of the ministers, he referred to the Democrat Party as the demo rat. And so there are people out there, even some very important community people here in North Minneapolis, who realize that the Democrat Party has sold us out and gave us a bill of goods that's not worth anything. So I'm making slow inroads. But when I started off on this, I knew it was a marathon. It wasn't a sprint. I knew I'd have to take my lumps. I knew that there would be people out there who thought I was crazy and out of my mind. But that's what's happened when you get off the Democrat plantation and you're black.
Boy, are you are just absolutely right on the mark. You really, it's amazing to me that there are not more of you. And I'm not amazed that more and more people are coming to your point of view, which has got to scare Democrats to death. I mean, they will turn every gun they have loose on you.
Oh, yeah. I'm expecting that. But once again, I was born and raised a Southern Baptist, and I still have a lot of those principles that I live by. And when I started out on this journey, by the way, I'm a businessman. I'm an entrepreneur. And so I keep interrupting my business building to do the politics. But when I started out on this, I said to myself, at the end of the day, it might be you and God going down this road. And I'm saying, hey, I'm comfortable with that. And if the whole world hates me and whatever, I'm comfortable with who I have with me going down this road.
Amen.
And so I feel pretty good about where I am and where I'm going.
So when you're out on the streets in Minneapolis or your district and meeting people, what do people that you run into think of Ilhan Omar?
Well, it depends. Of course, if you're a hardcore Democrat and you're one of those, and I don't even want to use this word, but I can't think of a better word right now, so forgive me. If you're one of those crazies, you're going to support her no matter what. But if you're open-minded and a lot of times when I approach people, they just like my spirit when I approach them, so they listen. So that hardcore Democrat Ilhan voter, they always be with her. But most people are open and they're open to discussions. If they're a hardcore Democrat, that's a longer conversation to win them over. But most of the time I can win people over with my personality, my logic and things like that. Now, of course, there's a difference between that and them actually walking into the voting booth and pulling the handle for me. And I realized that. But I got some great receptions from everybody, even hardcore Democrats, when we get a chance to talk and they hear my message. Because what I say, it's hard to argue with. And, you know, some people, once again, when they can't win the argument mentally or logically, they resort to their emotions and instincts. So I accept that. But I get good response mostly from everybody.
So everyone is under the impression, when I say everyone who listens to the news and knows anything, is under the impression, perhaps it's true, and I'm going to ask you this because you'll know the answer. Do you live in a mostly populated Muslim district?
No, there's no such thing as a mostly populated Muslim district, per se. I mean, well, it's according to how small or big to define the district. But no, my district, congressional district, is about 700,000 or so people. And out of that 700,000, the numbers I've seen of Muslims, at least Somalians, I should say, is from 50 to 80,000. Now, the interesting part about that is that I ran for state office, and I've had great support among the Somali community. In fact, I had a lot of the leaders go into the they went into high rise apartments of all Somalians, and they basically browbeat the people into voting for me. What people don't understand also is that on election day for the state office, the three people who were driving my supporters to the poll were all Somalians. So in fact, one of my main supporters right now is a Somalian. Now, I realize, and this is what I try to explain to a lot of people in the Republican Party, is that identity is still important to most people. And some people, it's going to take a lot more work to move them from their identity with whatever group, whether it's Somalians or Blacks or Indians or whatever. It takes a lot more to move them. But I feel I've made great inroads into the Somali community. And I figure if I get out and just knock enough doors and meet enough people with my message, we're going to do very well. Now, the issue we have here is Minnesota has infrastructure in a system that the Democrats have put in that really slants everything into their favor. I recently took a voter registration training class, And when you look at the voter registration form, you can see it's right for illegal voting. And so those are the type of things. And I, on the last election, on the early voting poll, every place it was at was at a Democrat stronghold. And the driver would actually tell the people who to vote for. Those are the type of things that we're up against. The Democrat had a campaign office in my district, probably of 100 people. And with me, it was about 5 or 10 of us. So those are the type of things that we're up against. However, the national campaign, the Trump campaign, has identified Minnesota as a place we want to focus on. So we're hoping to work with the RNC and the congressional committees and things like that to put a few more resources to register a few more voters. And I expect to have a lot more funds to deal with and be able to do a lot more things. So we expect to make it very competitive. And in fact, I expect to win. And so that's the line we're going down. We don't underestimate the challenge that we have. I just remember, and I always think of a line in the documentary where the guy strung the wires between the World Trade Center and walked across the Philippe. He said, "This is impossible, but I'm going to do it." And that's kind of like my attitude also. We're going to get this done one way or the other.
Now, Chuck, as he speaks about Somali support, I just want to remind you that in Chicago, Somalians in Chicago actually wear MAGA hats. And really? And go around trying to lynch black Hollywood celebrities.
Oh, jeez. So, with Jesse Smollett. Oh, my God. You know, I mean,
having this, you know, I don't know, having the Somalis come out and support you, that seems to be normal now here in you know, based Chicago on what's happening there. Who do you have running against you on the Republican side other than Danielle Stella?
Yeah, I got this Allie Waterbury, and she has some baggage. She's mainly running on an issue of anti-Sharia law and anti-Muslim. It's not a broad platform, as far as I know at this point. We got a debate coming up tonight. There's a used car salesman. I don't know exactly what his platform is. We'll find that out. And
picking on the used car salesman.
Well, that's what they told me. And if it's incorrect, I said it with the best of my knowledge and truthfully. So those are the three official people that I'll be debating tonight. And I expect to come out ahead in the debate. And like I said before, I expect to win endorsement of the party. Because I'm the best candidate.
You're going to be debating with Danielle Stella tonight.
Yes, sir.
So is she going to show up as Danielle Stella or is she going to show up as Danielle Sheridan?
And that's a good question. I do not know who she's going to show up as. All I know, and once again, I have a lot of sports analogies and attitude towards a lot of things. All I know is that if I prepare myself and I'm the best I can be, it's going to be pretty tough to beat me, no matter who she is or what her name is or what she come in the room with.
Danielle Sheridan and Danielle Stella. Explain that to our audience, because if I'm one of the audience, I don't have a clue what you're talking about.
So running against Lacey is a woman by the name of Danielle Stella. But Chuck, as you remember when we had her on, we uncovered on the show that her real name is Danielle Sheridan.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I forgot about that.
But she likes to call herself Danielle Stella, because she said she changed her name to Danielle Stella because she had a violent boyfriend that was out looking for her, which kind of didn't make sense to me, because I thought if you ran for Congress, that would make you kind of easy to find. But regardless, it
would certainly up your profile, that's for sure.
So regardless, he's not very bright because he can't seem to make the jump that his ex-girlfriend's running for Congress because she changed her last name, so I'll never find her now. And then she is also currently fighting shoplifting charges where she went to a store.
Yeah.
What was it, Patrick? Stole 26 items or something in one night, one day?
Yeah. In fact, I think she might have had a couple episodes of that. I'm not sure.
Well, she had a good
that,
reason for it, though, Chuck. She had a very good reason for it.
Why is that?
She stole 279 items from a Target store.
Man, you're about to carry those out in a basket. I mean,
I was about to say you'd need like three baskets just rolling out the front door with three baskets of stuff. But she says that she does this because she has PTSD, and this is how she treats her PTSD.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect congressperson.
I treat my PTSD by stealing exotic cars. So, and it makes it perfectly acceptable. Actually, when she told me that, if you remember, Chuck, when we confronted her on being a kleptomaniac in Target stores,
right.
And she said that she was, you know, basically compelled to steal things for her PTSD, I actually thought that made her a perfect candidate for Congress. Because anybody that's, I mean,
is in with the swamp.
Absolutely. Anybody that's, I mean, she's going in with shopping carts with stolen stuff. She belongs there. Well, you are not a, my understanding is you are not a pathological liar or a kleptomaniac.
So that's
helpful. No, I'm neither one of those.
So that there's a couple of disqualifying hits against you. Tell us what you would do different if you were the congressperson from there, other than you would probably not be down at the border campaigning against our own country. What would you do different?
Well, I will focus on some long-term issues that has existed in the district for decades. I have a slogan that I say, focus on fees. And the focus part is acronym for our community under stress and strain. The fees is an acronym for family, education, economics, and spirituality. And I would focus on the family. I think that's the most important unit in any civilization in any country, and make sure that we're taking care of our families. I would also promote education, especially in those districts where we're struggling with poverty. There's a lot of poverty in our district. So I will focus on education as a means to get us out of poverty. As a long-term root cause, getting at the root cause solution, rather than a lot of these Band-Aid approaches where they're throwing government money at all these programs for decades and they never achieve anything. The other thing I would do is stress economics. I'm telling everybody, and this is part of the message that people really like, that if our community, the community of poor people, the community of color, the black community, whoever, is ever going to get their just rewards, it's not going to be through begging and making people feel guilty and accusing a piece of people of racism. It's going to be out there competing in a global economic market, that we develop companies with technology, financial services, and other things, and we compete on that level. And then finally, the spirituality part is that, well, we need to start thinking about ourselves as part of a bigger whole, that it's not about us, that we're part of a family, that we're part of a city, we're part of a state, we're part of a country, and that we have responsibilities to other people in our country. And also to just look at things as basic ethics and morals. I mean, one of the issues in the black community is a lot of black men got criminal records and they're committing crime. Well, we got to stop committing crime. We got to start taking care of our families and taking care of our children. We have to start marrying our women. Those are the type of values that I want to bring under the spirituality umbrella. And, you know, you have to be careful because, when I look back over my life, the church and the spiritual teaching was a very big part in my accomplishment, in my outlook, in my feeling self-power. And me not giving up control of my life to a bunch of no-name people that we label racist and things like that. So those are the type of messages that I'm putting forward. And unlike Miss Omar, and she's really more content on being some type of political celebrity and being an anti-Trump political celebrity and people in other parts of the country and other parts of the world than she are with the people in our own district. So that's what's going to separate me from her. The other thing is that just the maturity to understand that it's not a good idea or it's basically wrong to be criticized and being anti-Semitic and anti-Israel when we're dealing with a country that's been our historical and strategic partner in the mess over in the Middle East. So those are the type of things that I would do differently. Of course, too, I'm a pro-Second Amendment person. I'm a pro-national sovereignty and security, pro-economic growth. I support the Trump agenda for that. And then I would like to bring citizens together. And somehow we as a country are going to have to start coming together and looking at ourselves as one people with one set of issues that we're going to have to work out. And in the final analysis, it's boiled down to I became a grandfather, and I got a great little grandson that's going to be turning 3 here pretty this month, next month. And we need to leave a better country for them. And to look at it like it's not about me and my how much money I make and what I get out of it. Well, I'll put it like this. I will be a leader who look at myself first and foremost as a servant, which is different than what's going on nowadays.
Is it ever.
Yeah, it a lot really of politicians, including Ms. Armour. So those are the type of things that I think I bring differently to the table than what's been existing out there to this date. And just let me add one more thing. One of the reasons I got into politics, because I got tired of sitting around listening to people talk about stuff that had nothing to do with people and their issues and solving issues for people. It was all about us and me and my political party. And in the meanwhile, the people are suffering unnecessarily. So I hope that wasn't too long of an answer, but that's the way I look at it.
You know, before I'm going to ask you about climate change in a minute, but let me ask you this first. Tell me a little bit about your parents and how you grew up and what led you into your business that you're in today. How did you get ahead?
That's a very good question. A poet once said, the child is the father of the man. So that's a very good question. I was born and raised in Natchez, Mississippi. We were a poor black family. There was 10 kids. Up until the fourth or fifth grade, we lived in a three-room, basically what they consider a three-room shack. All nine children slept in the same room, three of us in each bed. My parents were very strong. I had a great extended family of grandparents and great-grandparents and things like that. I grew up being an aunt and uncle. I was brought up in the church. And even though the South had, especially Mississippi, has a reputation of being horrible at public education, I had the best public education that you could ever have. And basically, God gave me a lot of good talents and blessings and things that helped. I had, like I said, great people in my life. I had God in my life. I had great food. I had great music. And so that was a lot of joy in my life, even though I was poor. And one of the reasons why I was here, because a lot of times they use race to let us vote, to make us vote for the Democratic Party, when I know that has nothing to do with it. So my background is basically...
Did you feel like a victim growing up? I mean,
I never felt like a victim in
all
my
of
life.
These, all of these kids, and I mean, boy, really overwhelmed, I would think, your parents would be and your grandparents and everything else, and living in Natchez, Mississippi, or is that where it is, Natchez, Mississippi? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, how did you feel growing up? I mean, the Democrat Party just preys on victimhood. So did you feel victimized growing up? Or did your parents even think about that?
The parents and the adults that I grew up with had us focus on us and being the best person we could be. Mm-hmm. And they never talked to us about race and victimhood or anything like that. They talked to us about God and hard work and getting up early and things like that. And all the adults were like that. So I was blessed in that way. As a matter of fact, I tell my Democratic friends that in the world of Democrats, there's only three types of people: pitiful victims, evil perpetrators, and Democrats, the great protectors of everything. But I never felt I was either one of those. So, yeah, I never felt like a victim. I've always felt like this is America and I can do anything I want. It depends on me and God. And if I get that straight, I'll be able to accomplish anything I want to accomplish in life.
Wow. Well, that's quite a story, Lacey. It really is.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had some success along the way. I mean, I've been star student. I've been chess champions. I've been a pretty good athlete, first trombone in the band. So God has blessed me to feel blessed every day and never complain about stuff. And this whole thing about victimhood and racism and stuff, I really don't deal with it personally. Even when I talk to young black children, unless they bring it up, I don't even bring up racism. I keep the focus where it should be, on yourself and what you need to do and things that you're in control of. And I've always felt that way. And I've always known that, and you know, growing up down south, and I tell this quick story, I never heard the N-word come out of a white person's mouth down south while I was growing up. Didn't get it until I got to liberal Minnesota. Really? And went to liberal Boston. Yeah, never seen anybody disrespect anybody, a white person disrespect a black person. So I didn't get all that anger and pain and stuff stored up in me that would hold me down for the rest of my life. So I've been blessed that way.
The Democrats tell us right now that the biggest risk and the biggest danger in America is white supremacy. What's your feelings on
that? That's a joke. I think that's a joke. And one of the reasons I'm out here doing what I'm doing, people need to hear a different message. And they need to hear from someone who's got proof and who's successful, someone who was born and raised poor and black and who overcome it, who know one thing. I know one system that works. I don't know any other system, but I do know what works and what the answer is and solution is. So, yeah, that whole white supremacist stuff, that's a joke, and the racism and all that stuff, I don't even get into that. But to me, to be honest with you, it's no different than lying and stealing and cheating, even if it exists. It's not out there to be a barrier to stop you. That it's just out there to make things a little bit tougher, but I don't
it
mind.
It didn't stop you.
Yeah, no, it's not going to stop anybody.
We're our own worst enemies, usually. That's really what it breaks down to. We're either our own best friends or our own worst enemies.
Well, the analogy that I use with my friends, the old Andy Griffin show, Otis, the town drunk, used to come in every Saturday night and lock himself up in jail.
Right, yeah.
And that's what we're doing with this racism thing. We're locking ourselves up in jail and thinking that this boogeyman is keeping us down and stuff like that. So I'm trying to point that out to people. I refuse to use that to lock myself up in jail.
Well, you know, Lacey, fear is a great tool of the left. It really is. And anything they can make you fear, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's whiteness or racism or supremacy, whatever it is, whatever they can fear, they will stoke that fear. And you have to really be a strong person to resist that, I think.
Well, yeah, but you know, when I think about back over my life, I've never been afraid or intimidated by anything or any situation.
Well, there you go.
And so, and so I'm not an emotional kind of a guy, and that's one of the gifts or talents that God gave me, that I have no fear or intimidation.
Speaking of fear going worldwide, how about climate change? Mark was going to bring that up. So, Mark, did you have more?
We'd like to know. Well,
I mean, that's all it is. It's just fear. The world's coming to an end in 10 years. And
we now have a 16-year-old climatologist that's galloping the world, telling us all that we have an existential threat that is going to render humans extinct if we don't get rid of all our cows, our dogs, and our cars. And
well, once again, I have this shortcoming where I've read a lot for myself, and I know a little bit about history and the evolution of the world geologically and things like that. And I do know that there's always been climate change around, even when there were not carbon emissions and mankind doing all these industrialized things. And so until someone explained that to me, that, you know, we had that ice age before and all the ice melted, and there was nothing but cars out. And until someone explained to me, yes, we see some changes going on. What percentage of that can you actually show me data and logic to tie that to
Well, they show you data all the time, and it's false data. Finally,
yeah, it's false data. Yeah, right.
It's not real.
Tell me some real, data.
Yeah.
And so, I just think it's a big hoax, and it's part of the whole thing where we need to get government involved in people's lives and give government more control over people's lives and taking away individual freedoms. And I heard you guys talking earlier. I'm just a big believer in the free enterprise system. Well, a lot more of a believer in the free enterprise system. I'm believing it than I am in government and government solution and government controlling things and government telling us how we live, what we can eat, what we can't wear, and that we got to buy insurance and all those type of things. I'm not in favor of that at all. I'm a small government, and I read the Federalist Papers. I'm familiar with the discussion during the framing of the Constitution. So I believe in the objectives that the founding father was shooting for, and that was a small, limited government that stayed the heck out of people's lives.
Well, I tell you what, I'd vote for you, Lacey. I really appreciate you coming on the show. We love to have conservatives come on the show and talk about what's really going on in the world and clarify their positions. And
we need to get rid of Ilhan Omar, too.
We just wish you the greatest success. We really do. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, folks, if you go to bluntforcetruth.com, go to the episode with Lacey Lee Johnson, you'll find links to his social media and links to his website there. If you want to participate or donate to his campaign, it'll all be there.
Okay. Well,
thanks again to Lacey Lee Johnson for coming on the show. Best of luck to you. Anything we can do, we'll be glad to help. And thank you for listening to Blunt Force Truth today. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with Mark Young. Our guest has been Lacey Lee Johnson, and we appreciate you listening. Bye-bye, everybody.